Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 2th of October, Anno Domini 2021, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Vendright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 11 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, cut off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the, before we do that, before we
do that.
Did
you say the tooth?
The tooth of October. I did. Before we get to the news,
that's wonderful.
I just want to thank you very much. I want to greet Dennis again. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. But Dennis has graciously consented to share his considerable expertise with us today.
That's right.
Rather than sitting around at home with his feet up.
Well, Steve's got a lot of dirt on me, so.
Oh, yeah, okay, sure. No, I get it. Believe me, he's got a lot of dirt on himself, too. All right. Here we go. A global deceleration of laptop sales. They're calling it a global deceleration now.
Not random empty shelves just about everywhere.
Right. Of laptop sales is being linked to a new report from market research firm TrendForce to increasing vaccination rates and a corresponding decrease in remote work and remote learning. According to findings, demand for Chromebooks slid over 50% during 1 month since July. And notebook shipments for the remainder of the year are expected to be affected by the COVID-19 pandemic and the shifting demand from businesses. And let's not forget the complete lack of computer chips.
Of products to buy. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, the sales are going to go down because there aren't enough to buy? Amazing.
This is how these people make a living.
It turns out you can't buy things when they're not on the shelf.
Well, hold on.
It's amazing how that works.
Give me a pen, will you? I need to write that down. TrendForce said the interest in Chrome OS-powered laptops within the last year has primarily been driven by remote learning.
Yeah.
The analyst pointed to rising vaccination rates in North America, Europe, and Japan throughout the second half of 2021 as recently slowing demand for Chromebooks. After being a primary driver of overall, couldn't have anything to do with the fact that everybody already bought one.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. The need that was so much bigger last year, whereas now the kids are going back to school.
I mean, the article's not wrong, but it's not entirely. It's not the whole picture.
Yeah, they're overemphasizing the wrong factors.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
After being a primary driver of overall laptop shipments in the first half of 2021, Chromebook shipments dropped by over 50% during 1 month in the second half of the year. And because Chromebooks represent a relatively high share of HP and Samsung's overall laptop shipments, the OEM shipments are predicted to fall by 10 to 20% in the first half of the year to the second half. Still, it's not all downhill from here. TrendForce still expects a total of 36 million devices shipped in 2021.
Oof.
Yeah. The FCC released the Emergency Connectivity Fund, which totals $7.7 billion United States dollars in July, in order to facilitate the purchase of such equipment as notebooks, tablets, and network connectivity devices by schools and libraries. This fund will likely sustain the demand for Chromebooks for the next year. Come 2022, vaccinations should be even more prevalent, and TrendForce believes laptop shipments will decrease 7 to 8% year on year to an estimated 220 million units. That's still 220 million units. Even if that trend line points down, note that it's still an improvement over the 160 million shipped in 2019 ahead of the pandemic. Look, these people are consultants. They have to make their money somehow. Chromebook demand is plummeting. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Chromebook demand is plummeting as the pandemic eases. Your choices are my company or school is still buying plenty. I'm getting a new one soon. I love Chromebooks. Meh. Chrome what now? And, of course, others. So far, we've got 18 votes, and meh is in the lead. If you have something else you'd like to say, or if you've chosen other, then head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, The number one item under poll discussion is 2 October 21. Chromebook demand is plummeting as the pandemic eases. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Yeah, plummeting from 220 million to 200 million.
Yeah, which is still more than the previous year.
Yeah. It is 7 or 8% by the time you're done.
Right.
And, you know.
But they don't, okay.
They have a high longevity. They have a low entry price.
Right.
The demand, yes, as people are going back to physical spaces like schools and businesses, yeah, the demand probably will go down a bit. But like I said, I think there's more to it. They're reporting on, you know, one third of it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the fact that last year was an overly exceptional year in sales.
Sure.
I mean, everybody bought Chromebooks because they were all at home.
Right.
And they were they're the easiest for any school administration to load up and get out there with the less hassles of maintaining them.
That's
as
exactly
far as,
right.
You know,
that's for sure.
Oh, I got to worry about this virus and all that other stuff. And the kids doing this and this. It's a device that a school system can put what they want on it and control where the kids go and what they do with it.
Right.
They just can't go home and, you know, load it up with all their games and sit there and play with their games instead of doing their homework.
Right.
That's not what was bought by the school system for. So, you know, they've got quite a bit of control. And like you said, yeah, the numbers are going to, they don't really need them. They last. I mean, if anybody saw some of these kids, books, you know, the little tablets that they have, they're in cases that are pretty well protected because they know kids.
Right.
And they're going to drop them and everything else. And they're in these, at least the few that I've seen, in these big Frogger cases.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these kids, they can take a bullet, you know,
yeah,
to go
really
through
durable.
Them before they actually break them.
Yeah.
It's true. I was helping a company repurpose some Chromebooks that they had received as a donation. And I learned about the power wash feature.
Yep.
Where you literally hold a key or two at startup and it says, by the way, do you want me to just blow away everything that's on here so you can start fresh?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay. And then I said, by the way, we're actually going to delete all of the things that are on here. And I said, yeah, okay. And then about 6 seconds later, it restarted and I was back in business. And I said,
like day one of the whoa. Came out of the box.
Right. And if you compare that against setting up a Windows notebook or a Mac notebook, considerable difference. And I think Windows and Apple, I'm sorry, Microsoft and Apple are interested in moving towards that as a goal, but they are not close to that yet.
No. And I mean, again, they don't have to worry about viruses, spyware, malware, any of that stuff. And like you say, if it does by accident get messed up, you do the power wash on it, you bring it back to day one, and then if you've got an image that you want on it, you just put it there.
Right.
You're done.
Right.
And it takes a matter of, you know, minutes. Like you were saying, you know, it's so darn fast.
It's and relatively straightforward. You can train somebody to help you with that, and you can blow through a lot of laptops really fast.
Mm-hmm. It's nothing. It was Control-Alt-R something. I don't remember what the stroke is.
But it was trivial.
It's trivial. And I did that. A friend of mine is paring down, what is it, Marie Kondo?
Yes.
Is her name? He's a big proponent of that, so he's getting rid of everything. He said, can you find places to give away these laptops? I said, sure, I can do that.
Uh-huh.
So he gave them to me, and I cleaned them all up, and I put Linux on a couple of them, because he didn't have a legal copy of Windows on it. But
Linux is there for you.
Linux is there, and it took, you know, half an hour per machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of them was a Chromebook, and it took 10 minutes.
10 minutes in one hand.
In one hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
You could hold a sandwich in the other hand while you do it.
Exactly. Exactly. And all you're really doing, once you hit that Control-Shift-R and hit the two yeses, you're doing nothing.
You're walking away.
You walk away. I had it sitting in a corner while I did something else. I looked over, it was done. I thought, okay.
Oh, that was nice. Yeah. That was easy.
So, yeah, it's Chrome. And Chromebooks do, you know, if you're a high-end gamer,
they're not for you.
they're not for you. If you're into a lot of video editing or audio editing.
If you're mining Bitcoin.
If you're mining Bitcoin.
Not so much.
But for the average user, email, surfing, listening to music, watching YouTube videos.
Yeah.
All of that stuff.
Doing any apps that are on your phone, your Chromebook, can do.
And playing web games. It'll do all of those things just fine.
Just fine.
And with, it doesn't get hot. It doesn't, the battery lasts a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very convenient, I would say, computing appliance. More than a computer. You don't have to be a computer person.
Right.
To run a Chromebook.
And the other, one of the other big features, and you know, you've mentioned it many a times on this show, is the fact that all of a sudden you'll see down in the lower right-hand corner, it's a notice. And it said, oh, yeah, we did the updates on your phone. When you get a chance, you just need to restart this machine because it will be updated.
Right.
Yeah.
And when it updates, amazingly, not like Microsoft, you don't get any blue screens of death or bricking of your machine. It just, boots back up.
Oh, yeah. Or blue screens where it says, hang on a minute, 0%, 2%, 3%.
Yeah, right.
And you have to wait for 10 minutes before it actually restarts.
Everything just happens automatically in the background, and you just see a little notice down there, and it's, when you get a chance, restart it, and you'll be good.
You'll be good. Otherwise, just keep using it.
Yeah. Restart it later. A couple times.
Yep. It's not going to stop you from doing things. It's not going to insist on a reboot.
Don't have to worry about doing that update versus this update, and it's going to ruin your machine or anything else.
Right.
Yeah, they're very convenient.
They're very convenient. They're very handy. They're very easy to use. And in particular, because you aren't doing high-end graphics and all that other stuff, They're high-end gaming and all that other stuff. They're ideal for classrooms.
Yes.
They're inexpensive. They're easily managed.
Mm-hmm.
And kids aren't going to do things that are really bad on them.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, and it allows you to get to the information you need to synthesize new products, whether that's a term paper or a slide deck about, the Louisiana Purchase or whatever. And you can create the things you need to create and synthesize the products that you need to make. And you can read the sources that you need. And for the most part, I think that's generally what they're looking for. You can also record video if you need to record video or record audio.
Or you can do video conferencing meetings.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, the other thing, too, is it gives teachers such great control. Because if they've got to send out a slideshow.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. They can send it to all their kids, and they can't sit there and say, oh, well, I didn't get it. Yes, you did. She can, verify that it's going to every one of those machines because it would come back and tell them no. But otherwise, they can't sit there and use that excuse.
Right.
Well, and it's like, yeah, you better review that or, class assignment. Same with that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get around that. And they're, because, like I said, the machines are locked down. And they're controlled by the school system.
One interesting trend I saw when I was still teaching at RIT is a lot of students had a big, good desktop in their dorm room
because
they were high-end gamers and all of that other stuff.
Hello.
But what they,
that was me.
That was you. But what they carried to class was a Chromebook.
Ah, rich kids. No, I didn't have one of those.
No, well, but
this is before my time.
Right. But the point is you could get, you don't have to be that rich, $200, $250.
No, not anymore.
Right.
No, in the 90s, you had to be rich.
Right. Well, I was teaching later than that. I'm not that old.
Okay.
I didn't retire that long ago. But kids were carrying, a couple of hundred bucks worth of Chromebook around.
Sure.
And that was quite enough to take notes. You just connect up to Google Docs, take your notes, close up your laptop. They're up there. You go to your desk. Back in your dorm, and the notes are there on Google Docs, and you're done. You don't even have to move them back and forth.
It's true.
You don't have to do anything.
Well, in the video, it gets better. The videos I've seen of what some kids were doing in class as late as a couple of weeks ago is they were taking their phone and taking pictures of the projector screen.
Oh, yeah.
And their phone was taking the words that were on the screen and converting them to text automatically.
Yep.
And then they were pushing those to a document for notes. Now, there's a certain amount of knowledge that gets transferred into your brain through writing things out. And there's a certain amount that gets transferred through typing things. things. And there's probably a different amount. I won't say more or less, although I have my suspicions.
Yeah, a lot less.
That you're capturing the information, but unless you're doing a lot of reviewing it later, putting a little bit of effort into transcribing it can help it sink deeper into your brain.
It sets into the brain and memory.
But the tools are getting much, much better where you can take pictures of things and then extract the text out of them.
Yeah, no, incredible.
It's incredible stuff. So much different than when I was in school, for sure. These days my kids are starting their senior year at school, and it's very common for the teachers to grade assignments and for those grades to be available to me immediately. There's a web portal I can log into. There's also an app that you can get for your phone, and you can turn on the notifications so that when your child has something turned in and they got a really good grade on it, you can get a notification on your phone. And if you've got a smartwatch, it pushes to your smartwatch and you get a little ta-ding. So-and-so just you get a little ta-ting.
Very good.
That's right. So, and it pushes to your watch. And
no, you mean.
Wait, what? How's it go? We'll find it. There it is.
There you go.
And it says, you know, little Jimmy just got a 93 on his math test. And I can say, oh, good. So I talked to my kids about this and I said, hey, that was great. And they say, Dad, it's a little creepy that you're hanging out and watching all this stuff. And
welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah, they said, our teachers say, oh, don't worry. Nobody's parents are watching this that closely. And then I raised my hand and said, my dad is.
You know, going back to your point, though, that these kids, you know, that are taking, the pictures of the notes and it's converting. Well, that could be also a good double-edged sword in that the kids then can't turn around, you know, if they don't do well on a test. Because they didn't take the time, like you said, to really study those notes, you know, and they just gloss over them and then that's it. And really study the material, they can't use it as an excuse. Well, I didn't understand it, you know, I can't use it. You didn't get the notes else.
I'm sure the excuses have changed with the times.
Interesting. I was taking a class at RIT for my master's degree, and there was a girl in the class who was deaf at RIT. And her interpreter didn't show up one day.
Oh.
I know very little sign, but I told her, I don't know sign, but I type it 90 words a minute.
The only sign you know is I don't know sign?
Pretty much, yeah. But I told her I type it 90 words
no
a minute.
No habla español.
And it took me a long time to go through this. Right. It took me a long time to go through this. I told her I type fast, so if you want to sit with me, I'll type out everything the teacher says.
You'll transcribe, okay.
I'll transcribe.
Yes.
So she did, and I did that, and honestly, I was paying no attention to the lecture.
Yeah,
so I was just letting it flow,
focusing on writing the notes.
I still remember an amazing amount from that lecture because I had typed it all out.
Right.
It
went through your eyes and ears. And
through the brain.
Yep.
Down through your hands.
Yep.
Hit your brain on the way.
Yep.
Yeah, but the grade thing, you know, I could remember having to race my parents to the mailbox to catch the report card to get that signed. And boy, those days are over. That's long since gone.
Yeah, those were the days. I'll tell you,
we always had that. We never got it in the mail. I always had to bring my card.
Yeah, we had to hand it to our parents and they knew what day it was coming too.
At the beginning of the school year, they sent a letter home. The days you were going to get off, teachers' conferences, what days the report cards come home. Because they were done quarterly.
Yep.
So your only chance was that they might not have put that on the calendar.
No, Mom had that on the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah, so did mine.
That's true.
I think every mother did. She was waiting at the door when I came home that day.
That was the information portal back then, the fridge.
That's exactly right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. You know, you can give us a call. That's a shock. 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Doug did from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Well, let's start the day with something really interesting. A year and a half ago, I installed Ubuntu 18.04, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I don't print a lot, I do recall printing once or twice before I upgraded to whatever it is now, 20.04, the LCS version. Can't print anymore. And this is a dual boot machine. So if I boot into Windows 10, I can confirm that the printer and the cable are okay. They work. But back into Ubuntu, nothing works. And if I go to print and then check the print queue, there's nothing there. And the only other clue I have here is that when I look at printer properties in settings, it shows three different printers. Actually, two of them are the name of my printer, one all by itself, the next one followed by the name of the computer, and then one that says CUPS-BRF printer.
Yeah.
None of them work. So.
And none of them work. The thing to try first is to delete all three of them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And install a new printer.
Yep. Tell Linux to forget about all the printers it thinks it knows about and reintroduce it to the printer that you have nearby.
Right.
I've done that twice.
Okay, good. You've done the first thing?
Yep.
And then you installed the printer again?
Yes, I did.
What printer is it?
It is a, how long have I had this? Long enough to know, a Epson Workforce 500.
And it's a direct connect?
Yes. And no network, just a freestanding computer.
Okay, USB cable?
Yep.
Okay.
And looking at printed details, one of them says address is localhost. The other one says address is null, N-U-L-L.
Yeah, that'll never print.
Okay. So what is localhost?
And I'm not sure the localhost is going to fly either. That's typically what you'd put on something that you don't want to talk to the rest of the network.
Yeah. It's very odd. And,
You might need. Oh,
The eyebrows just went up.
Yeah, it might be that you need to download the driver directly from Epson.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
they have a driver.
Is there a setup utility that comes with that, or is it just the driver?
I'm looking.
Okay.
64-bit?
Yes.
For Debian?
Ubuntu, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Correct.
Well, it just took me to the same stinking... Oh, I see. Because this is it. Okay, got it. I will post a link in our forum... normally Steve does that when he's here,
yep.
But
do you know how to get to the forum?
Yes, I do.
Ah, brilliant. Okay.
So not our forum, on the homepage.
Right.
On our homepage.
Okay.
I'm trying to log in and do that as we speak. Wouldn't have been smart if I'd logged in before the show started.
Yeah, you know, you're going to have to start coming to rehearsal.
Got to stop ad-libbing it. That's how that works. But I will post.
Are you new at this or what?
Yeah. It's his first week. We're trying to go easy on him.
I don't know. I don't know my line. I was an actor for 20 years. I've had this nightmare. I don't know my lines. I don't know the blocking. I don't know what play we're in, and I'm naked on stage.
And he just breaks out into improv.
I've been there.
I need an occupation.
Well, while you're doing that, you have other calls waiting because I've got another doozy for you.
For you, we'll make time.
We'll make time.
Here we go. So 3 days ago, in an attempt to get my Windows installation running more quickly, this was originally an upgrade from Windows 8 to Windows 10 on a slow machine. So I decided I'm going to follow Microsoft's instructions and do a clean install and bring up the spooky violins.
Mm-hmm.
It went fine. I was seeing the types of notifications in the modern Windows design that told me everything was going well. Finally got to the point of asking me things like time zone, yada, yada, and my mouse and touchpad froze up completely.
Hmm.
That was the end of that. Now, I can understand why that could happen. So I walked away thinking, even though there's no disk activity, by some magic this will fix itself. But no. So I basically did a hard shutdown of the computer.
First question for you.
Yeah.
Was that machine approved to run Windows 10?
It didn't come with it.
Well, that's not my question. See, they had an approved list that if you were going to go, say, from Windows 7 or Windows 8, and before you even tried to put Windows 10 on it, you were supposed to go over and check to see if your particular model computer could handle Windows 10. Because, you know, it'll go through and go through all the motions and everything else, and then it gets to the point where, like you said, it's now installed, so now it's booting, getting ready to sign in and everything else, and it chokes.
But why did it run well since last year?
With Windows 10?
Yeah. I upgraded from 8 to 10, and it's been, other than being slow, it's been running fine. Nothing's been locking up that way.
Yeah, but if you...
Is this the same version of Windows 10, or did you download the newer version?
I downloaded the latest as of 3 days ago.
Yeah, 12H2 or...
12H20.
Yeah, again, there's all bets are off.
Yeah, and I had done all the updates 2 days before that, so presumably they were the same versions.
Mm. So,
check for BIOS updates. You know, this smells like it's something maybe deeper.
Okay, well, thank goodness I have Ubuntu on the computer. So
yeah, now, this... so this was a dual boot machine.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's printing okay.
From Windows. Windows, yes.
Well, this is the same machine.
Yeah.
The same machine.
So when you say the mouse froze, is it an external mouse or is it the touchpad?
You said both.
They both. Both froze up.
Some type of HID driver.
And that's never been the case before. You know, I can dual boot back and forth all day long, and no problem.
That's a good one. That's a good stumper, actually.
That's a good one. I would start at the BIOS and work backwards.
Yeah.
Okay.
And see. Anyway. If you boot, if you grab a live CD or a live image and write it down to a flash drive. Mm-hmm. See if you can boot from that and see, make sure your mouse and keyboard work.
Gotcha.
You know, kind of work backwards from there. Start with the simplest thing you can think of and then add just a little bit more complexity. See where it falls down.
Baseball bat.
There's that.
But like I say, any slight change in Windows updates can, you know, throw a whole monkey wrench into the whole system.
Yeah.
That was running, you know, perfectly. You know, and everything was copacetic and the world was great. Then it goes down the toilet.
Yeah, yep. Everything works till it doesn't.
Yep. All right, so back to the Ubuntu printer thing. So you're going to post this on your homepage?
Hi, how are you? The Ubuntu post is already up.
Oh, good.
Where? Let's see.
So it should be there.
Right on the homepage?
Yeah, it should be the third or fourth thing down. Yeah, there it is, number 3. Epson Workforce 500 Ubuntu driver.
Amazing. Okay.
Amazing.
Ta-da. High tech.
This works. You guys are getting cheese Danish next week or something.
Ooh.
There we go.
That
thanks.
Sounds nice.
All right. Well, thank you for the help.
Thanks.
All right.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Another satisfied customer.
That's what we like to hear.
That's one.
Older devices, whether mm-hmm. they're printers or flatbed scanners or whatever the heck they are, theoretically will work with most Linux devices, but you do have to have the right driver. And particularly for something like this, when the manufacturer has their own driver, you know they did something funky
mm-hmm. yeah.
somewhere. What a lot of them did... is they left a lot of their own workings to Windows. Microsoft had generic low-level drivers for everything. And so a lot of these companies, in order to make it work faster, their driver would just say, oh, Windows already does that, call that one.
Right.
And Linux, of course, doesn't do those things. So those drivers have to be rewritten, and the generic drivers don't work because the generic drivers assume that the thing does it stuff right. So you need the specific driver from the company. In any device at all, always check with the company if you find you're having a problem with a generic driver. Check with the company to see if they have a specific driver for your system.
Mm-hmm.
It's
always good advice. Yes, make sure you know what the manufacturer's opinion about installation looks like. see what their position on it is.
Right. And you will often find that when something is old enough, nobody's going to support it anymore.
Right. Your best bet at that point is to look to some other project, whether that's, what do they call it, Gutenprint, or I'm sure it's got a new name now.
No, Gutenberg Printing is right.
Gutenprint is still around.
Or Cups, yeah.
Yep. And see if there's a generic driver that might still work. Now, if you've got one of those multifunction machines that does printing and scanning and faxing and copying, don't expect all of the features to work with some of those generic drivers. But if your goal is to put toner on paper, chances are good that those are going to do what you need.
I have a printer that faxes and scans and prints as well. And the driver will only print, but there's another program that does scanning.
Sure.
So I don't need it to all be in the same thing anyway. So that works. And of course, I've never bothered to try the faxing at all. I don't even have a landline anymore. So
does anybody even fax anymore?
Yes.
Yeah, people do.
Yes.
Businesses do. It's not as common.
As opposed to emailing?
The problem is verification of ownership.
How do you prove that it came from the people you say it
true,
did?
Right. And the fax, so, for example, my daughter works for a law firm. They do a lot of faxing because you have an actual signature.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I forget what they call it. Heliographic, holographic?
Something like that.
Because there's an actual signature that gets transmitted from me to you.
Okay.
That's a kind of chain of ownership thing.
No, they can't that makes sense.
It's a legal thing.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
and for a long time, it was prescriptions and medical records and other things, too. But
Now nobody cares.
Now, with EMRs, I think it's different.
Well, they were like just the recent story there about the post office, you know, how they're going down the toilet, you know, prices are going up and things are taking longer. Well, yeah, because their budget is still X amount of dollars. But think about it. And I had to think about it myself is, you know, a lot of my stuff now, I just have it automatically withdrawn.
Right.
Sure.
Out of my, you know, checking account.
You're not writing checks.
So, you're not doing the writing all the checks and using the postage. And that's the way a lot of folks are doing it now. So, yeah, it is a lot less stuff going through the U.S. mail now.
I'll tell you one thing that hasn't stopped, because I've got triplets and because they're all seniors in high school, they're all getting every brochure from every college all over the planet. And as soon as I find a good way to cast my own iron and make a nice little wood stove for the winter so that I can, with a little mail slot on it, so I can just slide them in one at a time and let them burn and heat up my house.
A friend of mine
this winter
did that many, many years ago, got a pellet stove.
Okay.
And then a machine that transformed paper into pellets.
Okay. A shredder / compressor.
Yes. Yeah. After which she subscribe to every catalog on the planet.
And they'll bring it right to you.
And they brought her fuel.
And you don't need an axe or a wood splitter, and you don't have to stack it. I don't know how nice it is to burn all those inks, but there's plenty of mail happening at my house. I'll tell you that much.
I bet there is. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bill from Fairport, New York. Hiya, Bill.
Hi there. How are you today?
Peachy, how are you?
Just ducky.
Ducky. What's up?
Well, okay, I have had I've got a computer which I'm going to dedicate to a firewall to protect my network there.
Okay.
And I'm, you know, running a full network.
All right.
Previously, I used Starro.
Yes.
Sophos.
Yep.
You know, the free version.
I remember it.
And okay. And I'm looking for any recommendation if there's something different I should consider.
The one that comes to mind is pfSense. I have a friend who's running that and seems to like it. And if you're sufficiently techie enough, which it sounds like you might be, Bill, then that would be the first thing that comes to mind. What do you think, Nick?
I agree. I think pfSense would be good. There are quite a number of firewall products. Are you talking on a Linux? You're going to transform the whole machine to whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly whatever. It's just dedicated machine.
Right.
Now, if I remember right, pfSense had a product that you could buy, but they also had a free version that you can play with.
Yes,
it
is free and open source.
Okay.
I used it in a class, so it's been 10 years.
It's been a little while.
It's been a day. It's been a minute. But it is one of the most trusted network security solutions on the planet. And
if it's been around that long, there's probably a really good support community if you have questions, and probably some pretty good documentation.
Huge support community, yeah.
So it might be at least a good place to start.
And it's at pfSense.org.
That's P as in Papa, F as in Foxtrot, Sense, S-E-N-S-E.
Right.
Okay.
pfSense.org. Everybody who uses it seems to love it. I used it in a networking class, and you want to read the documentation.
Right.
To set it up. But once you get it, once you figure that out, once you get the documentation in your head, setting it up is not that difficult, and it works like a charm, and it's really, really good.
I would also, for myself personally, if I knew that I needed to set this up relatively soon, I would go over to YouTube, and I would find a 10-minute or less pfSense overview just to get a sense of what things look like and what it's good at. And if there's something that it's maybe not as good at, chances are good that they will mention that. And you could learn more in 10 minutes doing that than you might in looking for documentation and trying to figure out which parts to read and which parts to skip.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you very much for the suggestion.
You got it.
I'll have to go look it up. Thank
yes, you will. pfSense.org.
Okay. Yes. You can order some. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
He can go for dinner tonight. He can go order some PF Chang's and configure his pfSense.
Too bad you can't buy PF Flyers anymore. I used to have a pair.
Yeah.
I didn't save them. I used them.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a whole a community of people who follow, who support and use pfSense. And I think you'll find that those are good people to get in touch with. As with every community, there's jerks.
Oh, sure.
But you just you ignore them and you move on to the good people. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hello. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. You're such a nice man.
Thank you.
For somebody in a lecture.
Uh-huh.
That is so you. That's awesome.
Thank you very much.
Most people would not do that.
I am who I am.
Exactly. You are who you are, and you're awesome.
And that's all what I am. Thank you, Mark.
Cue the spinach,
you're
yes.
Now, where's the check? No.
Yeah, your check's in the mail. Yeah.
Yours will be soon, though.
That's right. It's coming up.
Yeah. I just got my notification.
Good.
So I wanted to tell you about two new programs that are totally free that I love.
Okay.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
No.
One is called Image Glass.
Okay.
It is an image viewer that is open source and is beautiful compared to what Windows has. And it even, you know how the old Windows photo viewer would match your color? It would deal in the proper color that your monitor was.
Yeah.
The new one doesn't. That came in 10 or 8, whichever one is started in 8.
Okay. Yeah.
This one will let you even pick which color scheme you want.
Nice.
Hmm.
And you can skin it with about 10 different skins. It's beautiful.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, this is a Windows program, or?
This one is strictly Windows, from what I can tell.
Right. It looks like you can download an MSI, which makes it easier to install.
Yes.
Right. And then there's a video editor called OpenShot.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And this one is not only for Windows, but it's for Linux and Apple.
Yep.
It is a beautiful open source video editor, very simple, and it works great. I even bought him a beer.
Nice. You can do that with a lot of places now. When you go to, you know, to donate, you say you're buying them a beer.
It's nice. Speaking of beer, it's for all of us Mac folks. It's available via Homebrew. If you're interested, there you can do brew install OpenShot-video-editor and get it right away.
And it's easy to use, and there's a lot of YouTube videos on it. If you're having any trouble, transitions, everything, it works fantastic. So I thought I'd throw it your way.
Cool.
Thanks, and it is available in Linux distributions as well.
Nice.
Yes, and I'm using that on my Linux machine too.
Nice.
Well, I always like hearing about things people are interested in and excited about and discoveries they've made, because that's always good to know. And if I try it out and I like it, then I can be the cool guy who shares it with the next people. And just like Mark did.
Yeah.
Right. And I liked it so much, I bought him a beer, like I said.
That's the way to do it. That tells you it's a good product.
Hopefully they'll keep making more products.
Cool.
Hey, we hope so. Thank you, Mark.
Oh, you're welcome, guys. Have a good one.
Have fun.
If
they don't get drunk. Well, I'm sure they don't spend
it all
responsibly.
On beer. Yeah.
Maybe they do.
Well, you know, it is the last weekend of Oktoberfest.
Could be a big company.
That's right. They may need a lot of contributions to buy everybody a beer.
Yeah.
Just one big one.
One big beer.
You
know, buy a beer, buy a coffee, or just, you know, go to Patreon and give them money.
That's good too.
Mm-hmm. However it works.
Right.
We're finding a lot of places. A lot of YouTube channels are being demonetized, so they're all moving to Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of places are, you know, they don't want to go the route of
running
every month sort of thing. So they just do buy me a coffee or buy me a coffee,
right,
a donut or a beer, whatever it is. And that's a one-time contribution.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, on the Soundbites page.
Right.
We
well, it's
donate
like
button.
The people that do the Jazz-O-Matic subscription. They they can donate periodically, or if they just want to make a one-time donation, they can do that too.
Right. As you may know, Monday starts our pledge drive for the fall.
Is that right?
We're very excited about that. So
it's going to be great.
Those of you who love this show and want to continue to see it on the air, next Saturday we will be soliciting your pledges. So save up your shekels and we'll see you next Saturday. Make a pledge on the air. We need to beat the polka guys this year.
I was asking. Going to ask if we're still in competition.
We're in competition.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not winning, but we're in competition.
Yeah, okay. We came close last year. We came close. I mean, it was so close we could taste it.
I bet we could do it.
I thought we could, and we did not. But this year, I am hopeful.
It's a new year.
Yeah,
I believe all of you people will absolutely give us the push we need to go over the top, and you'll help us out and get that going for us. In the meantime, we're going to take a slightly longer break. That's right. The first hour of this show is over, but we'll be back with another hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, and we will take your call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1. on Instagram at WGMCJazz901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. That's right. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. The amazing Dennis Worster has come to grace us with his knowledge, his presence, and the joy of him being here. So thank you very much. The crowd goes wild.
Yay. And bail out Steve.
And bail out,
yes,
all of us.
I'm passing the hat.
That's right. All right. That's give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. A number of websites and services reported issues on Thursday. You probably got hit with that.
I heard about this, yeah.
Yeah, thanks to the expiration of a root certificate provided by Let's Encrypt, one of the largest providers of HTTPS certificates. And when you go to a website that uses encryption that starts with HTTPS, so you know it's secure, it requires a certificate. That certificate has to be signed by a certificate authority. You can't just, well, you can, in fact, just rack up one of your own
certificates.
But nobody trusts it.
Yeah, right.
But so if you want to be trusted, then you have to be, has to be signed by an authority. Well, one of the big ones expired. They only live for so long and they have to be renewed. At around 10 a.m. on Thursday Eastern Time, Ident Trust DTS Root CAX3.
Oh, yeah.
Expired. Oh, that one. Millions of websites rely on Let's Encrypt services, including mine.
Hello.
Without them, some older devices will no longer be able to verify certain certificates. Let's Encrypt operates as a free nonprofit, which is why I use it.
Right.
That makes sure the connections between your device and the internet are secure and encrypted. Despite advance warning that the expiration date would be on September 30th when the deadline hit, users reported issues with a variety of services and websites. Issues were confirmed with Palo Alto, Bluecoat, Cisco Umbrella, Catchpoint, Guardian Firewall, Monday.com, which I use all the time, PFSense, Google Cloud Monitoring, Azure Application Gateway, OVH, Auth0, Shopify, Xero, QuickBooks, Fortinet, Heroku, Rocket League, Instapage, Ledger, Netlify, Cloudflare. Look, there are a lot of them.
All of them. All those.
All those and more, but noted that there may be more. Some sites posted notices on their website about potential issues, and many have resolved the issues. All modern digital systems depend on certificates for their continued operation, including those that secure our cyber and physical environments. Outages can occur when developers embedded in lines of business operation code or other skunkworks projects obtain certificates without the knowledge of central IT. I hate when that happens.
Yep, shadow IT is bad news.
Bad news. And then move on to new tasks or otherwise fail to monitor the life cycle of those certificates. So what happens is they create a test system.
Right.
And they get a test certificate, which is fair. But then they move on. Somebody else comes in, makes it a live thing, and doesn't bother to look at the fact that this is a test certificate and it's going to expire.
Right. They push the test system into production.
Right.
And they don't check that this
really
needs
been
to
fully
be
tested.
Needs to be resolved first, and they don't log it as a dependency, and then suddenly bad things happen when the certificate expires, and suddenly your customers that may be paying you are less happy than they otherwise might have been.
Right. Now, most systems should be able to weather a root expiration because there's modern root chaining capabilities, which allow another root to establish trust. However, legacy systems, older computers, or those with previously unaddressed or unknown certificate handling bugs, test systems, for example, are at risk for failures like these to occur. In the event of a commonly used root from a popular CA or certificate authority, the risk to these failures goes up considerably. Devices that may face issues, so you may still be faced with these, our Mac, older Mac OS 2016 and Windows XP with Service Pack 3 devices, as well as older versions of PlayStations, and any tools that rely on OpenSSL 1.0.2 or earlier, also Android 7.1.1 or earlier. Devices will also be affected, and some of the older iOS devices will also be affected. So, did you have issues? Do you still have them? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yep, the security updates that come out every so often, one of the things they're often doing is making sure that all this, the certificate authority routes are up to date, and that all the intermediate things are fully verifiable. You know, so you start with the root certificate authority, and they are kind of the big marble institution with the columns. And when you say, "I'd like a please, sirs, I would like a certificate, please," they say, "Well, who are you? Prove that you are you. Show us that you are who you say you are, and then we will declare that, yes, this person is who they say they are." And you can do that for servers, too. And there are intermediate certs. You know, your company, for instance, can get a cert. And then all of your various projects can say, "I am part of this company, which does exist and is who they say they are because they've proven it to this other certificate authority."
Right.
And you can kind of build a chain of trust.
Right.
That
and that's how the chain works. Everybody trusts the big guys at the top. They trust the next level. They trust the next level. And that's the chain.
Right.
But as we were saying,
if Let's Encrypt gets involved.
Right.
And they're in the middle and their cert, or one of them, not all of them, but one of them expires, then everybody who's below them isn't able to prove necessarily that they are who they say they are.
Right. But we knew this was coming for like a year.
Yes, this is not a secret. This is
right.
There's a big expiration date on all that you can inspect and see.
And we knew that was happening, and most of us updated our certificates when and where we could. Now, some machines will not accept. These older machines may not accept the new certificates.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we at our end can do about that.
Yeah. That's what it is.
That's just the way it is. And that's too bad, but nobody's supporting computers that are 7, 8, 10 years old. I'm just not doing it.
And that makes it tricky for people who are vintage collectors of computers that still want to get things on the network, either to download older drivers from a repository or something else. Then
that becomes more difficult.
But most of the time, when it comes to that older stuff, you don't really necessarily care if it's a secure website or not. You can tell your browser to say, "Well, you know, it's okay to ignore that in this case. I'm not giving over
information.
I'm not giving over personal information or medical information. I'm just trying to make a download here." But it's very possible. You know, we use where I work, we use Monday as a tool for keeping track of our projects and the status of them. And we were not available. that tool was temporarily not available. But I can tell you for sure that I was using it on Friday and it worked just fine.
Yep. I had a problem at Tails, and I don't know if it's fixed yet.
Okay. Well, we'll check on that.
It looks fixed. I won't try to download it on this machine because it's not for this machine.
Right. So I guess the advice that we could give to listeners is go and install the updates from your OS manufacturer, whether that's Microsoft or Apple or Ubuntu or
whoever
that might be, and do the same thing for your tablets and your telephones too. Keep those as up to date as you can. That's the best way to not only be protected against potential security vulnerabilities, but also to help make your secure web browsing as smooth as it can be.
If you have a website, make sure that your tech people have done the updates that were necessary there. If you are the one who runs your website, make sure you have done the updates that are necessary there. And like we said, this wasn't a secret. We knew about it for most of a year. And so, you know, as soon as the new certificates became available, most of us updated. I don't even remember how far back I updated.
It's been that long.
Yeah.
So I have a little story that's tangentially related to this. A million years ago, when I was just a baby computer person.
Sure.
fresh out of college at my first job.
You were a puppy back then.
I was. The internet was a new and exciting thing, and I was spending a lot of my time trying to convince the people that had worked there for a long time that they should really get in on this email thing. It's so much better than getting up and walking around and trying to see everybody and get everything resolved. You not only can email within your own company, but you can email people to other companies too. So one of the things you need for this is a mail server, and a mail server needs a domain name, and our company had their domain name and had it before I got there. And they started noticing that email was not moving anymore. And I said, huh, that's weird. And I had discovered that our domain name had expired. And I wasn't in charge of this, but I had to try and work around, and email wasn't working, so I needed to go and visit people at their offices and figure out how precisely, who is the person who is to be notified about this, and who's the technical contact, and who's the responsible party. And I found out that I went to the president of the company, and it turned out that it had been put in her name. And I said, okay, so what happened? And I said, that, you know, they send you stuff in the mail, like on paper. This was in the 90s. And she said, well, it looked like junk mail, so I threw it out. And I said, okay. Well, here's the natural consequence of that action is that your company is losing money, and now we get to try and work through this. And I said, if it would be okay, I'd like to be the new technical contact and administrative contact for that. And she said, oh, absolutely, yes.
Absolutely.
I said, excellent choice. And we were able to get things resolved. But yeah, it, in much the same way that, that certificates expire, so do domain names. So if you're in charge of those things, put a nice big fat reminder on there. Now, chances are good. This was back when there was only just network solutions. They were the granddaddy domain name registrar. Later on, a million and one registrar companies came along and started offering discounted rates and all sorts of bells and whistles. But back in those days, there was just the one. And they charged an arm and a leg for domain names because they could. They were the only game in town.
It's what the market would bear.
Right. They were sort of like AT&T.
Exactly. That's all you had.
It's just that's what there was. And
all the domains I have now auto-renew.
Oh, yeah.
And price keeps going up.
It's like, what a concept.
Exactly. But I still get notices.
Yes.
You know, X domain will expire in 15 days. No, it won't.
Well,
I'm good.
That is the date, but
you're right.
We have other mitigating
things in
things
place.
Happening. That's right.
My my daughter's website, there's a it's ameliarose.com, and she really isn't using it right now, but it's the only ameliarose.com there will ever be.
Right.
And there's a company that wants that domain name.
I'm sure.
And they've got it. They're parked on it. You know, if you go, you can
see who's waiting for it to expire.
Waiting for it to expire, and it's her. But it auto renews, so at least until my death.
Until your credit card changes,
or she can make him one heck of an offer.
She hasn't really stepped up.
I have a friend who was offered five figures for a domain name and took it.
I would have
and bought himself a couple of really nice bikes.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I missed nick.com by one day.
Yeah.
Nickelodeon grabbed it first. Oh. I would have been rolling in it.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Well, and then there were domain name squatters that would grab like McDonald's.com and all the other.
Yeah, there was a bunch of them.
But there's rules now that, see, I would have been able to keep Nick.com because I'm a Nick.
Sure.
So if you took out McDonald's.com, they'd just take it away from you.
Right.
But if your name were Dennis McDonald, you would have every right to that domain name.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way it used to work. So yeah, right, and now of course, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law. So
all right, gentlemen, what domain names do you have for projects that you thought you would do but haven't done anything with?
LowdownDirtyDeals.com.
Okay, what was your plan?
What a great name. We were going to put up deals.
Okay.
You know, go
bargains.
Look out the bargains and put them up.
And like so a deal of the day kind of
deal
thing.
Deal of the day, you know, on various sites.
Sure.
We were going to do that, only the guy who was going to do all the work, because I wasn't going to do it.
You're an idea man.
I'm an idea man. Backed off. I wrote all the code. It was all set up. I don't think I still have it anymore.
Okay.
I think somebody took it right away from me.
Did you? Yeah, I was going to ask, do you still pay the renewal fee on it?
I don't remember. I got rid of a lot of them, and I don't remember which ones I got rid of.
They say that the strength of a geek is his ability to let a domain name expire that he's not done anything with.
But it's still there.
And you still own it?
Apparently I do, and certainly nobody else has taken it over.
You're still paying rent on it, even though there's nothing going on. There it is. All right. Do you have any others? That one you came up with really fast.
Yeah. That may be the only one I still have left. My wife wanted to do a thing for the Rochester Public Market.
Okay.
So I got rpmvendors.org.
Okay.
Still there. I don't remember which ones I still... I had like two dozen of them. And eventually I got to the point where I thought, I don't need this.
Right. Why am I paying 15 bucks a year or whatever it is to keep this dream alive, you know?
I was taking a class in college and for my master's degree. And the teacher was saying, you know, you can't... This is years and years and years ago. Today it's true. But at the time she was saying you can't make money on Google Ads.
Oh.
And I was saying, no.
Oh, yeah?
No. Back then you could.
Right.
You can make a lot of money. I said, yeah, all you got to do is take out the right domain. And she said, it can't be done. I said, you can make $400 a month on those.
Mm-hmm.
I knew people who were doing it.
Sure.
And she said, if you can make $400 a month on a domain name, I will give you an A in this class.
Okay.
So I said, okay.
Challenge accepted.
Challenge accepted. I went and took out Should I Get LASIK Eye Surgery.com.
Okay.
Because she said it had to be a hard name. She gave me rules.
Okay.
One of them had to be a long name.
All right. So you brought that to her and she approved it.
She approved
she
it.
She said, go for it.
I set it up. I did all back then, SEO, search engine optimization, was easy. Mm-hmm. Now it's a black art. You need covens and black cats and midnight. But
yes.
Back then it was pretty easy stuff.
Right.
So I set this thing up. First month, I made $420. Second month, I made $600. Third month, this is a semester, remember?
Uh-huh.
Well, trimester back then.
Sure.
Third month, I made more than that, $700-something, I don't remember. And she gave me my A. And then I took it down because I made fake money. I mean, it wasn't... I wasn't getting LASIK eye surgery. And,
right.
You know, but I had a forum and I had all this stuff. I was taking ads from anybody who'd put an ad up. And all I did, the way I did it was I went to Google. Google has tools where you can look up who's paying what.
Right.
Yeah. Who's paying what for keywords. And LASIK at the time was paying bucket loads of money.
Right. Because it's such a niche.
Because it was such a niche. So that's what I took out, and I had ads. I mean, you know, I had text like in the middle in a two-inch
sure.
block and ads, but that was the point.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? And
make the money.
It was the million-dollar homepage before the million-dollar
exactly.
homepage.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And so I did that, but I let that one go.
Okay.
I think
so
it's gone.
You made, what is it, a couple grand?
Yeah.
From that. That's nice. You could buy a lot of holiday presents with that.
Yeah, there. Well, it's still in my little list, but I don't think it goes anywhere anymore.
Well, I had one that I was going to do that I
yeah,
let
no,
expire.
Can't get reached.
I after 10 years of not doing anything with it, I let it expire. I had drivegently.com.
Nice.
And my idea was that I would sell bumper stickers that just said "Drive Gently," and that was it.
And that's beautiful.
I would put, you know, some pros on the site that said, you know, driving gently is about, you know, saving the planet and conserving gas and saving your own money and being safer and gentler with the people around you and all this, you know, marketing copy. You know?
So nice.
And then, you know, you can share your desire to drive gently with the world by buying a bumper sticker. You have a drive gently with a little leaf poking out of the Y or a little dollar sign piggy bank poking out of the Y or, you know, whatever. But I didn't quite get that running. I had worked with a designer and we had some ideas, but I had to let that go because it was a nice dream, but I just wasn't quite ready to commit to it. So I'm sure somebody else has since picked that up, which being that it's only a couple of words strung together.
Okay, here's one I had. Sorry. Here's one I had, saleschemistry.com.
Sales chemistry. Okay.
Rep my startup.
Okay.
Look, there's a million startups.
That's true.
What they need is a representative, somebody to rep them, somebody to sell them.
Yeah, an agent.
And I thought we could be that middle person.
Okay.
I also had LASIKinfo.net, DirtyDiningDeals.com.
Okay.
I had that one.
Why has it got to be dirty?
Because that's what was free. I looked up dining deals, happy dining deals, cheap dining deals. All of them were taken.
Uh-huh.
Dirty dining deals was...
Oh, you got the alliteration there.
And I got the alliteration.
That's true.
I had... my daughter was going to run for a Congress seat in Arizona.
Okay.
So I had Francesco for Congress 2018.
Mm-hmm.
She decided not to. Chromebookclass.com. Makers Exchange.
Ooh.
For makers to exchange information and stuff like that.
Right.
So I had that one for a while. I still have yourdailybible.net. You go there and you see. If you go there every day, you can read the Bible in a year.
Oh, I see. Okay. So it's broken up into 300 plus components. Okay.
Right.
Well, hey, if that's a goal of yours, that's a way to make it achievable and a little reminder. And if you know people are coming back every day, then there's lots of repeat business and
yeah, but I don't have any ads on that. That's just you know, that's just a service.
Sure.
So that's there. People can donate from there, but I don't have ads.
Dave, did you ever jump into the domain name project?
My partner Dan and I, once we moved over to Empire, we were going to start a company called Med Reminder.
Med Reminder, okay.
And what we're going to do is charge clients. Parents of elderly folks to sign up for our service, and we would call their parents and remind them to take their meds, whether it was through text, phones, and everything else.
It's like a wake-up call, but for medicine.
Yeah,
okay.
To remind them to take their medicines because, you know, too often people would be getting involved in it, but unfortunately we never...
Interesting idea.
Yeah, but, you know, it was just an idea we were floating out there.
It's a great idea.
You know, yeah, because, you know, a lot of folks are so busy with their lives and their kids and everything else to also remember, oh, I've got to call my mom to make sure she's taking her medicines. Whereas if a friendly voice could pick up, you know, call her, you could set it up with a phone bank, you know, so-and-so, and put it on a whole schedule. We had a whole design laid out that we were going to do it that way.
Interesting.
It's a great idea. All right. We're going to take a quick break. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worster, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites on the truly great and truly grateful that we are member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, Dave, what's the name of that app?
Okay.
There's an app?
Yeah, there's an app.
There's an app for that.
Yeah, okay. There's an app for it. It's called Picture This.
Picture This.
And what it'll do is you can take a picture of, say, some weeds or whatever, or plant growth.
Okay, okay.
And it will sit there and identify it for you.
I see. So it takes the picture and then tells you what plant
that is. Yeah, because like Nick's been trying, past couple of weeks, he was saying about this coverage.
Yeah. He's got something in the backyard that he really likes, but he doesn't know what it is. And he
it's like a lawn coverage, you know, where it could save you a ground coverage.
It's a ground cover.
Yeah, so you don't have to mow.
Let's take a picture of Nick and see what plant he is.
But yeah, I found that, and it's pretty cool.
He's a balsam fir, huh? Eh. What do you know?
Who would have thunk?
But yeah, it's kind of a cool tool. Like anything else, you know, there's so many darn apps out there. One other thing before we go to the phones that I wanted to kind of mention. You were talking about, you know, the websites and everything else
and
the certificates running out. One thing that folks have to be aware of, and it's going to be happening over the next 10 years. And what I'm talking about are sunspots.
Okay.
Yeah. And sunspots are going to get bigger and bigger and disrupt GPSs. So if you, last I knew this, there was a big flare that was supposed to hit the Earth either today or maybe later tomorrow. And what that can do, you know, I mean, you're not going to notice it that much, as you know, just walking around or anything else. But what it can do, folks, if you're driving, all of a sudden your GPS could go bonkers. And totally go wild, or if you're trying to find, you know, your way here or that, it will disrupt service. It could be just for a few moments. It could be for half a day, depending on how big the flare is. So don't be surprised over the, and like I say, we're just at the bottom of this sun cycle that it's going to start ramping up, and then we could get hit with what they call M-class flares that can disrupt your GPS systems in your car, if you got it in your watch, or if you're the type of person that goes out trucking all over the place and, you know, on your phone and you're finding your way and all of a sudden it goes out, don't be surprised.
And I live on my GPS. I can't, I can't find my way out of my own driveway.
Well, there's a great service. Her name is Dr. Tamitha Scove.
Okay.
And she's called the Space Weather Woman. And she does usually once a week a report, and it'll she gets a whole report and telling you whether, you know, you're going to have blackouts of that. She also, if folks are big into photography and aurora photography, she'll warn you, you know, all right, you want to watch it, you know, the northern skies or the southern skies and get some really good aurora photography. But she'll warn you also, though, about these blackouts and that.
Spaceweatherwoman.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She, well, she's now into ham radio, and she gets a report every week, and she'll tell you, you know, whether radio propagation is going to be good, but that you got to watch out that, you know, blackouts and everything else due to these sunspots.
Right.
And it can mess up GPS systems and everything else.
Interesting.
But just be aware, folks, if you're have, you know, because now most cars all come with GPS systems. So don't be surprised if it gets messed up or all of a sudden.
So it might not be the car.
Yeah. And it's not the car, you know, and all of a sudden you see that the arrow's not moving along with you or it gets just, you know, going off.
And that happened to me today. I wonder if it's already started. I was coming from a different place, and I'd been there once from there, here once from there. And so I had the GPS just in case.
Yeah.
And consistently it thought I was 150 to 200 feet behind myself.
Yeah, it can just, like I say, it was due to, this flare was a what they called a direct hit. And it was going to hit the Earth's surface and disrupt GPS services.
Right. We're fine as humans because we have the Van Allen radiation belt and the ozone layer and an entire atmosphere.
Yeah,
right,
it's just that it messes up the satellites and everything else out there.
Hmm. All right, back to the phones. David from Leroy has been waiting patiently on the line, I hope. Hi, David. Sorry
Indeed
to keep you waiting.
I have. And now for something completely different.
That's okay.
I've been wanting to call you guys for quite a while now about my M1 Mac Mini.
Okay.
I've had it for almost a year now. Mm-hmm. When Apple first introduced it, normally in a product cycle, I'm the guy who buys it after everyone else has bought it and tested it out and stuff. But in this case, I had been wanting to buy a new Mac Mini for quite a while. Wasn't even sure they were going to update it. Well, boy, did they update it.
That's true.
You know, so I bought one last year around this time, October, November, and I really, really liked it. It's just a super fast little computer, and the fact that it doesn't have many ports is fine because there's plenty of people out there, you know, building hubs that I can use for either the Thunderbolt 3 capability, right. You know, or USB-C, which is it's not quite interchangeable, but the slots are pretty much the same. Anyway, so I'm liking it, and I understand there's newer stuff coming out that's a little faster, but that's okay. I just bought a new iPad 9, upgrading from my iPad 3. Oof. And wow, is this fast.
Yeah, that's going to be a big difference.
It's super fast. I mean, it's not as light as I thought it was going to be compared to the 3, but still, it's really fast. But, you know, it took me a while with the M1, with the software, because not everyone was, you know, exactly at right. the same place Apple was when it first came out. And I had one or two programs that would routinely either cause it to just freeze up or get into a, you know, cycle where the little beach ball was spinning constantly. But that's pretty much over. For the most part now, everything is built with M1, you know, mm-hmm. in mind. And it just, the fastest thing it does is video rendering. It's incredibly fast when it comes to video rendering. Everything else is very nice, but video rendering is very fast. I guess what I'm wondering, with all this hoopla out there about Windows 11, wouldn't it stand to reason that, you know, Apple tends to lead the pack a lot of times, that Windows machines are eventually soon probably going to ARM software, and Microsoft isn't really putting a lot of effort into that?
I would say that Apple is very interested in developing they work towards a certain number that they want to maximize, and that is performance per watt. They want the most number of calculations that they can do for the same amount of electricity. And that's really great for laptops, for tablets, and for phones. For desktop machines that are plugged into the wall for power, it's not as big a deal, but the performance is still nice to have, and it's more convenient for a manufacturer to have a very common set of hardware to code against and to have in their supply chain in order to be as efficient as they can. I think that in general, there's going to be a class of equipment on the Windows side that will probably be a typical home user setup, not for power user gaming or for high-end rendering. But I think that the performance gains for that market segment are growing considerably. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if Windows is going to shift to ARM. I suppose that's very possible. I think that would be more likely to happen with their – don't they have the Surface? Are those on ARM?
I don't think they are, but there is ARM for – there is Windows for ARM.
Yeah. Right. It already works on the Raspberry Pi. That's what I'm running ARM right now on two of my Raspberry Pis.
Okay, and you get Windows 11?
I'm also running that with Parallels.
I'm running right. Windows 10.
Okay, 10.
Windows 10, yeah, 10. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, nobody's running Windows 11 yet, except
right.
in pre-order.
No.
So is it? But is our ARM devices coming into the consumer space?
Sure.
Yeah.
Raspberry Pis are all ARM. A bunch of these things are all ARM.
Okay, so in the Chromebooks and the Raspberry Pi, kind of the low power, low electricity power.
Low electricity.
Yes. 12 watt. Five watt
or less.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you can get an ARM device. Windows on ARM is pretty much in the same place the M1 was in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
There are some apps that don't work well.
Mm. Right now.
But more and more of them every day are working better and better. So you're really at the point where Windows people are at the point now where you were last year, David.
I see. Okay, well, that's really about all I have to say, because everything is, for once, going really, really well.
Good.
So I'm happy with this machine, and I think Apple's got a winner, whatever is up its sleeve for the future. So.
Well, that's great to hear.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks.
All right. Now, you're welcome. Have a nice day, guys.
You too.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was wondering, now, Apple has gotten pretty good at chip transitions. They've done it once before when they went Motorola 68000 to PowerPC in the mid-90s. They did it again in the mid-2000s with switching over to Intel, and now they're looking at moving over to their own in-house silicon. So they've developed kind of software and other hardware compatibility layers that they called Rosetta that allow you to run Intel things on a non-Intel chip. Is Windows doing a similar? Is ARM doing a similar thing?
There
to
is
run
a compatibility
Intel?
Layer.
Okay,
yeah,
it built in,
and still some apps just don't play nice with that.
They just don't play nice.
Well, yeah,
same
but,
thing with Rosetta. Not everything works.
It works really well.
But
exactly.
The amazing thing though, I found with my ARM and running it on my two Raspberry Pis is you got to stay tuned, just like when computers first came out, weekly, because there's constant upgrades and changes
and tweaks.
I get weekly updates that, you know, well, they've now done this and now this works better. And that it was literally a couple of days that first when ARM came out, it wasn't working with the sound card. You had to go get a separate fob. Well, it took them literally about 4 or 5 days. And this one guy that I recommend folks listen to all of a sudden was putting out a video. Oh, they solved that problem. Now their sound is working off the Raspberry Pi. Hmm. You don't need the dongle. It's working.
Oh.
Yep.
How convenient.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's been true of all of these devices. So you'll find that a thing like the Raspberry Pi, again, it's very seductive to be able to spend $100 and get everything but a monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes all the cables and the mouse.
Yep. Right.
Yeah. Right, 4 gig machine with 1.8 gigahertz processor, and you can't compare that to a 3 gigahertz Intel chip because it's an entirely different architecture.
Right,
but so they're very seductive, and the ability to run, they've been able to run Linux from day one.
Mm-hmm.
But people like Microsoft are seeing a whole market segment they were not playing in.
Right.
So yeah, there are now ARM versions of Windows 10. And I'm sure there will be of 11. But what they're looking forward to, of course, is Windows in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
And then all you'll need is some sort of app on whatever device you buy.
Right.
And then pay them every month.
Sure.
Or year.
Yeah, it becomes a subscription. You're getting the 21st century equivalent of a dumb terminal or a Minitel that lives in your house.
Right. Well, the one other quick thing that they did was, you know, for the longest time, you had to do everything on the Raspberry Pi off a micro SD card.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then, you know, with the SSD hard drives coming out, people were going, you know, it'd be nice if we could just load the operating system directly and have it boot off this hard drive.
Yeah.
I think it took them all of 2 weeks. Now, under the Raspberry Imager, you just go over to the feature and say, okay, now make the SSD hard drive bootable.
Hmm.
And you load your, it'll then put the operating system down onto the SSD hard drive. You don't need the micro SD card. I'm running two of my machines now off of SSD hard drives. And they both, one of them replaced my old server, which was very old.
Okay.
Very old.
It was an old box. It was,
a tower.
Yeah. Super tall tower that was getting to the end of the time. And now things are so much faster because it's running off an SSD hard drive just for moving files. Mm-hmm. That's all I use it for is backup and shuffling files.
What I love about that is when it's done, it reminds you to take out the SSD card.
Yeah.
So, take out the SSD card and reboot.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. Thanks.
Otherwise,
there's so many different of my ham programs that they've moved right on over, and it works fine on my little Raspberry Pi 4.
My 400 boots from a 512 gig SSD.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, USB drive, but I didn't need to have another thing hanging off. So I got this tiny, tiny little...
little dongle type thing.
Yeah, it's no bigger than my thumbnail.
Right.
Sticking out the back. And it's 512 gig. It's half a terabyte.
Right. No, I was talking with my dad. My brother gave my dad a very nice quadcopter for Christmas a couple years ago. And he was flying it around in my front yard. And he said... And it will store, you know, so many minutes of video on this tiny little thing the size of your thumbnail. And you know, he and I had grown up together through the 80s and done, Tandy Color Computer 2 things where we would save to cassette tape. And
yep.
Mm-hmm. Growing through the 5 1/4 inch drives and the full size, full height hard drives. And 3.5-inch discs and CDs and flash drives and zip drives and done the whole thing this whole time. So to get down to the point where it's you hardly can imagine what they might shrink it down to next, if it's any smaller, you know, you won't be able to hold it between your two fingers.
Well, like I say, the Raspberry Pi is like no bigger than a deck of cards.
Yeah, it's true.
Right.
I've got mine connected to my 3D printer. It runs a tool called Octoprint.
Octoprint, great product.
And it's available for free.
Yep.
And it talks to my 3D printer and tells me what the it gives me telemetry about the 3D printer. The 3D printer has a hot end that you run filament through, and it melts it and it deposits it and uses that to build things one layer at a time. And it comes back and says, okay, you're on layer 3 of 500 for this model. It's going to take another 48 minutes for this to finish. Your tip temperature is 200 degrees Celsius. Your bed temperature is 40 degrees Celsius. It tells me where the what the communications happening between the two is. You can plug a webcam into the USB port and aim that at the 3D printer, and then go to the little web page that the Octoprint makes. And from my laptop upstairs, I can keep a tabs on what the basement, what the printer's doing down in the basement, and see how far along it is. And get this, it will take a picture at every layer, and then stitch all the pictures together into a little animation.
That's a great thing.
And this is for free.
Yeah.
And you get a little movie of your model kind of growing up like a crystal out of the bed of the printer.
You can even set it to move the print head out of the way before it takes the picture.
Right.
So it looks like the thing is growing magically.
Out of nothing.
Yeah. It's so cool.
And it's for
like time lapse.
And you don't do anything. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Time lapse.
It takes one picture that's triggered at the end of the layer.
There are so many projects out there and things to do with the Raspberry Pis. It's unbelievable.
This might be a good time to mention that next Wednesday, not this coming Wednesday, second Wednesday of the month,
okay,
I will be speaking at the Apple Cider meeting on the Raspberry Pi.
Is that right?
Is that unbelievable?
Now, where are they holding those meetings these days?
Zoom.
Zoom, okay.
It will be on Zoom, so you can go to applecider.org and
you can learn all about that and find out where to be. And then on the second Wednesday of the month, you said?
It is the second Wednesday of the month.
And which group was that again?
That would be Apple Cider, C-I-D-E-R.
.org is the website?
.org, applecider.org.
Okay. And do they charge anything to come to that meeting?
In fact, they do not.
Amazing.
That is an absolutely free meeting, and we will be talking about the Raspberry Pi. Also, purely coincidentally and apropos of nothing else we've been talking about, I just finished writing another book, and it is available on Amazon.
Mm.
It is called Getting Started with the Raspberry Pi.
Is that right?
It is.
My goodness.
You can either search for me, Nick Francesco, or search for Getting Started with the Raspberry Pi, or I suppose I could put a link on our website.
That
might be handy.
There's an idea.
Isn't that something?
And it is a beginner's book. It is not designed, I'm not teaching you the depths of Python or, you know, how to solder stuff to the GPIO interface.
Dip your toe in.
Yeah.
See what you think.
Yeah, this is, I'm interested, what are they like, or I just got one, what are some first things I can do?
Right.
That's what it's for, that's who it's
for. Just get the ball rolling.
Yep. Exactly.
Okay. Keep your feet wet.
First gear,
exactly right.
Okay. Well, that sounds good.
Because they are so much fun, and like you say, don't have to spend a ton of money.
No,
and if you mess something up, it's like, you know,
there's no
big
parts.
Deal. You just take the card out, reformat it, put it back in, start again.
Yeah, short of spilling your coffee on it, I don't understand how you'd possibly.
I tell people the only way you can hurt it is if you're typing with a hammer.
Yeah.
Other than that, or spilling something in it, I suppose.
Right.
Yes.
They're pretty durable. There's no moving parts. There's a lot
to like. Because I usually, you know, I mean, I've got it as a shared drive on my network. So.
And it doesn't take up a lot of space. You could do all of your projects in the space of a shoebox and put it away on a shelf when you're
I've got it
on
in
it.
Two different parts of my basement.
Uh-huh.
Because they don't like to be close together.
Okay.
So I put two, I've got file server and just a workstation.
Right.
Down in two different parts of my basement. Because then I've got another two Raspberry Pis upstairs.
Mm. Right.
I got a few of them.
Well, you know, they make a good gift, too.
Well, they're, you know, like I say, one's a server. Well, they're both doing backup, you know, in opposite ends of the house and that. And plus, you know, backing up to the cloud is, I like, as we preach here, you know, back up, back up, back up. And, you know, I'm just as dedicated to that as Nick and the, Steve on that. And we, you know, that's why we preach it each week, because I worry about, you know, the photos and everything else. Documents, yeah, it'd be a pain in the butt to do. But over the decades that I was doing computer repair, it was always gut-wrenching when folks would come to me and say, my computer died, and I lost all these pictures.
Yep.
Oh, there's nothing worse.
Because pictures are something, folks, you cannot go back in time and recreate.
Yep.
Documents and all that other stuff, yeah, it might be a pain in the butt. You can recreate those. But, you know, the moments of your kids growing up or graduations or trips or memorable moments, you don't back them up and they get deleted, they're gone forever. And there is no bringing those back. And, you know, I used to always say, sorry, I would have loved to have gotten them back, but, you know, there's nothing I can do. It was dead. Unless you want to send it off to Drive Savers or one of those companies and maybe see if they can get it back. But it's going to cost you big bucks.
Right. No, it's expensive to get that done. I mean, it can be done, and they'll certainly give it their best shot.
And again, there's no guarantee there either.
Zero guarantees. Now, if you do find yourself in that situation, you can check to see if your homeowner's coverage might cover part of this.
Right.
You know, talk to your agent, see what
and
might
be possible. And if it doesn't, see if you can get it added.
Yeah. No, it's definitely.
What that will cost.
Well, just so that you're knowledgeable about what the situation is. I would say back to the Raspberry Pi, the thing I like about it the most is that it reminds me of being a kid and just being curious about what was possible. And the Raspberry Pi really rewards your curiosity. If you're wondering, could I do this or how would I do that? Chances are good somebody has thought about this and said, well, here's what I tried. And they'll give you, you can mimic what they did in minutes. And then you can take it one step further and then talk about what you did. And it's this concept of just being interested and being curious and being willing to tinker.
For me, it's, you know, being older, quite older than you, it takes me back to the days of I wound up going to Western Autos. There used to be a place called Western Autos, and it was an automotive and different gadgets, and got a crystal set. Built a crystal radio.
I had one from Heathkit.
And I can remember going out on the porch and climbing out on the roof and running the wire either end and then bringing it in and then leading it along. And then I'd sit there for hours, you know, searching
up and
for
down
the
dial.
Searching for that. And, you know, these the Raspberry Pi sort of takes me back to those days. There, you know, I can play around, tinker. It wasn't much money. And, you know, you can have hours and hours of fun
with
it.
Well, it's the same idea with the 400. It's like getting a Coco or, you know, any one of the things that was a computer and a keyboard.
Yep. Yeah. All in one.
Yep. The TI, not TI, the Timex Sinclair ZX81.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
We used that. And
I had a Jupiter Ace, which was a, ZX81 that had fourth in it instead of basic.
Okay. Yes, I lived in Basic World in the 80s. That was my
nobody includes my life. Basic anymore with anything. But now we have Python.
Python is pretty good. I'm still learning a lot about that. And I know you gave me a script last time I was here that I've been peeking at.
Cool. Yeah, I should have told you there's things that have to be. You have to install some libraries.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. I'm picking it up.
Good. You'll get there. I really am enjoying Python. Anyway, we're done. That's it for this week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I particularly want to thank Dennis Worcester.
No problem.
Dennis has been very kind to come out here when Steve cannot make it, and it's always a joy to have him here and all the other nonsense I say to him to get him to come back again. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget, next week we will be in a pledge drive, so spend the week thinking about what you're going to do with your spare change, and hopefully maybe you'll even
return your soda cans.
Yeah.
And make a quick phone call.
Right. We're done for another week. Be good to one another, will you? We'll see you in just 166 hours. It's Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1. and is supported by our members.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.